From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made about a week ago when retired neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson sat down for an interview on CNN with Chris Cuomo. Dr. Carson is considered a contender for the Republican presidential nomination, and in some early state polls, he's leading some bigger names such as Chris Christie. Cuomo asked Dr. Carson about his opposition to same-sex marriage. Dr. Carson explained that homosexuality is a choice, and as evidence, he said that people go to prison straight, and many of them come out gay. He was serious. That set off a wave of backlash, some even within his own party, and it has prompted more discussion on the state of equality and understanding in 2015. So let's talk about that this hour. My guests include Angela Clark Taylor, a program manager from the University of Rochester's Susan B. Anthony Institute for Gender and Women's Studies. She is an instructor at the Warner School of Education, and she has taught a course called LGBT Issues in Education and Human Development. Angela, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Scott Fearing's here. He's the executive director of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley. Scott, nice to see you.
Great to be back.
And John Cullen is here. He's a coordinator for outreach for the university's Anthony Center, and he's the chair of the Pride Alliance at the University of Rochester. Nice to see you, John.
Thank you, Evan.
You know, we got to start with Ben Carson's comments. Let's start there. That's what prompted a lot of this discussion, and we're not going to spend the entire hour on this, but let's listen exactly to the exchange that Dr. Ben Carson had with Chris Cuomo, starting with that question on equality, same-sex marriage, and the doctor's views on it.
People have no control over their race, for instance.
You think they have control over their sexuality?
Absolutely.
You think being gay is a choice?
Absolutely.
Why do you say that?
Because a lot of people who go into prison straight, and when they come out, they're gay. So did something happen while they were in there?
Most
ask yourself that question.
Most gay people never go to prison, and there's a whole theory of dominance.
Wait a minute. I said a lot of people who go in, come out. Are you denying that that's true?
I actually wish I had been doing the interview because I actually don't think Chris Cuomo did a great job there. But regardless, the remarks are his remarks, which were that people go to prison straight and they come out gay. Scott, where do you start with that?
There's so much to unpack there. I think the place I would begin the discussion is to accept the fact that there is honestly an element of choice in this conversation. That is my choice to be honest and authentic in my life and accept who I am as a gay person and let other people know. I did not choose to be gay, but I did choose to be honest about that. No one knows what causes sexual orientation, why some people are straight, some are gay, some are bi, some are pan. You bring in whatever labels you want. There's no scientific proof of what is or isn't going on. But what we know is throughout human history, across animal species, we see same-sex behaviors, have always seen same-sex couples. So this is a natural part of the wonder and the complexity of life on this planet.
John, take me through the process when you were growing up, when you were weighing the choice of straight or gay, and how did you make that choice?
Well, it never was a choice for me. I just chose not to express my sexual orientation. So sexual orientation is a desire or based on attraction, and really, whether you act on that is a choice, but your orientation is not a choice.
Yeah, and so when you first heard Dr. Ben Carson's remarks, what did you think?
I was shocked that it kind of seems ignorant. He had nothing to support what he said. Also, when you look at this issue of sexual orientation, it's one of the few human characteristics where we're actually looking, where people judge it based on the cause rather than the outcomes. So, for example, if it caused some sort of societal behavior that was detrimental, then you would condemn it, whether the cause was innate or a choice. But this is where people are looking at the cause first rather than the outcome.
I thought the remarks were bizarre, Angela, and I'll be honest with you. I first saw the headline in Salon, and once in a while, I'm not going to speak with a broad brush here, once in a while Salon will put up a headline, and it won't perfectly match the content. For example, they'll say things like, Republicans reveal that they actually hate workers, and then the content will say that they oppose a minimum wage increase, but nobody actually said, I hate workers. In this case, I thought, there's no way Ben Carson said that. And then I go and watch the piece, and I was shocked to be sitting here in 2015 and hearing that. What did you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I was surprised that Mr. Carson, Dr. Carson, would go on television and make an assumption and make statements based on an assumption without doing his research or even kind of looking into where those assumptions stemmed from. I think in the Washington Post article, Dr. Eigenberg summed it up incredibly. She's from the University of Tucson, and she said there actually is no research that supports his claims. And there are studies as recent as 2013 that says that his claims are unsubstantiated.
Yeah, in fact, exactly what Angela's talking about, Dr. Eigenberg, is Helen Eigenberg. She's a professor of criminal justice at University of Tennessee. And she went on to say, quote, in the 1950s or 60s, there was a concept of, quote, situational homosexuality that talked about men going to prison and becoming gay because of the lack of women. But that concept is not accepted among experts in the field any longer. Public sexual identity can change, of course. People who are gay aren't always open about it. And she continued to say, whether some men believe that they might have come out of prison expressing a different sexual orientation doesn't mean that prison made them gay. So I don't know. Ben Carson has since said that, okay, maybe I was wrong about that, but he has also said that he thinks that he should stop talking about the issue of homosexuality entirely. In a radio interview with Sean Hannity last week, Carson said he's not going to talk about gay rights anymore, quote, because every time I'm gaining momentum, the liberal press says, let's talk about gay rights, and I'm just not going to fall for that anymore, end quote.
Well, I this is Scott jumping in here. I hope that's the case. He has a long history about with saying really ridiculous things.
I don't want that to be the case, though,
LGBT.
Scott. I want him to talk about anything
Absolutely.
He's asked about, because I want to know if there are certain disqualifying factors.
If he's open to learning and having a discussion and looking at the science as well as what's out there, absolutely. But he has a history of linking homosexuality with bestiality and pedophilia. He has talked about the gay mafia, which apparently I'm a member of. I don't have the bank accounts to show for being part of a mafia. So he just has a ridiculous history, and it oftentimes is about grandstanding and getting himself some press.
Okay, well, but he has also followed up by saying, maybe I was wrong about the prison thing. And we can talk about that in a moment, too,
sure.
Because as much as we may laugh at that comment for being ignorant, I think there are some serious repercussions for spreading this notion that prison sex is all about choosing homosexuality and not realizing that there are some deleterious effects of prison rape that are a real problem. We'll get to that in a moment. But he then followed up to say, okay, but at the very least, science is murky, homosexuality, I believe it's a choice, et cetera, et cetera. So let me go back around the table, and Scott, you mentioned we don't know, but when people ask you, you do a lot of educational seminars. Mm-hmm. When people ask you, what does the science say? Number one, what do we know? And number two, what should we care about it?
Again, the reality is, from a scientific point of view, we can't point to a gene or a brain study, or there's been studies done on the length of fingers of homosexual men versus heterosexual men. There's all sorts of attempts to try to find proof, cause, etc., and none of it has ever really panned out. Going back not that far, I mean, within my lifetime, they were trying to transplant heterosexual testicles into gay men to make them straight. You know, just ridiculous things that used to be done to try to cure, lobotomies and you name it. So as far as science goes, we don't know. Again, my bottom line is, we know that people do. We know that animals do have same-sex relationships. So ultimately, to me, it's part of the wonderful mix of life.
But when it comes to what's been done in your lifetime, again, sure. Time magazine in the last week has tried to go back through Ben Carson's remarks about homosexuality, choice, what does the science say? They cite a couple of different attempts to look at this, as you say. 1991, a study by neuroscientist Simon LeVay finding that a region in the hypothalamus related to sexuality known as INAH3 is smaller in gay men and women than it is in straight men. Investigators at UCLA found another brain region associated with sexuality, the mid-sagittal plane of the anterior commissure, I believe, is 18% larger in gay men than in straight women, and 30% larger in straight men. And also, are male babies treated differently in the womb by simply the female body? Is there impact there? So I'm sure you've heard those over the years.
Absolutely. And I know my INAHA is smaller than my heterosexual brothers. That's just, something I've learned long ago about my cerebral cortex. Again, we don't know. And again, I've read studies about, that you're more likely to have gay siblings if you're the third. You're likely to be gay if you're the third boy born because of the changes in your mother's hormones.
It's possible, right?
It's possible. Hormones are incredibly powerful and have a huge impact on the brain. And maybe there is something to that. But again, no one's been able to find a definitive link. And, you know, you talk about causal or situational sexual orientation. You mentioned prison sex. We also know there's what's known as trenches sex, or even same-sex experimentation by adolescent boys, Boy Scouts, etc. It's about human sexuality and oftentimes people wanting to feel connected with somebody else. So it just gets very, very complicated.
But you're not against science looking for explanations here.
The reality is, though, even if they found what piece of my genetic makeup made me gay, I would still be gay and there'd still be bigotry. We know what causes skin color. You know, when it comes to choice, the real choice is really around religion. And we stand up against bigotry there because that is choosing a way to express your faith. As far as I'm concerned, race and sexual orientation and a number of other things aren't about choice.
John Cullen, are you interested in seeing science pursue this further?
I really don't think it makes a difference because it is what it is, sexual orientation. There have been some discussions around genetics, and there are some concerns that perinatal, that if parents can find out that the child is going to be gay, that they could genetically change it so that the child isn't gay, so that is a concern. But I think that society's moving forward. It was 1973, it was considered, until then it was considered a mental disorder. And, you know, we've taken great steps. And when you look at conversion therapy, which is another big issue, and has been the American Psychological Association don't allow any of their members to practice it. It's been shown that people cannot be converted from homosexual to heterosexual. So whether a cause is found, I don't think it's going to make any difference. I think the social behavior and equality is what we should be looking at.
Before we get to the phones, and again, if you want to join the conversation, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. On the point of embracing the fact that science has looked at possible elements in here, in our genetic makeup, without finding a single easily explained cause. John, what do you say to people who would say to you then, well, if science can't find a single cause, then maybe it really is a choice?
That's a very good question. Again, it's very intricate, very complex.
I think they use that lack of scientific explanation in their favor.
Yeah, and I mean, this is very difficult to study. It's people have looked, again, as Scott mentioned, genetics, the brain, hormonal exposure for the fetus. So it's, again, I'm kind of stumped as far as that question goes, so I can pass it on to Scott, maybe.
Scott, you've heard it. People will say, Absolutely. Well, if science can't give you one explanation, then it must be a choice. They fall back at that and say, ha. And you say what?
And I own up to the fact that we can't prove one way or the other. And ultimately, it comes down to how do we treat each other as human beings? What does it matter if my partner at home is a man or a woman to you, walking down the street next to me or waiting on me in a restaurant? In most cases, it makes no difference at all. And if we get all upset and spend our time worrying about other people's partners and their love life and their sex life and things like that, it does society no good. So, you know, as long as they're adults, as long as it's consensual, you know, the risk factors, the harm is not there for society.
Angela, are you interested in the science?
Yeah, I was about to say, Evan, can I jump on that?
Yeah.
So as a social scientist, I'm particularly interested in the social piece and how people interact with themselves, with their partners, and within society. So I want to understand why we all of a sudden have a lot of politicians who want to look at difference again as deviants. We see something that is apart from us, and we immediately have to make it deviant as opposed to just being something different. And I think that we've been seeing a lot more research in the social sciences around LGBTQ issues in that arena. And I think that that is what's truly important here, to understand the oppression that happens to communities based on class, race, privilege, prison status, right? But to not see it for the LGBT community is incredible. So I say, what does it matter if it's a choice or not? I think the real issue here is about what Ben Carson thinks is deviant.
The phones have lit up, and it's interesting. Before this hour started, our guest said Ben Carson's remarks, everyone in this panel agreed that they were so off the wall that would there be much to talk about? We're not, the hour is already going to fly here. Look at this, Scott. What were you worried about? The phones have lit up. Let's get. We're going to take John and Webster. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Evan. Thank you. I've spoken once before. I'm a retired philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the 80s, I taught a course for 2 years on choice in philosophy, and the subject was homosexuality. I wonder if anybody has asked that good doctor if he chose to be heterosexual. I doubt that he have, and he probably would say he hadn't, but apparently he thinks that some people are faced with that choice. It's puzzling to me why a section of humanity should be faced with that choice, as far as he thinks, but not himself. And I don't go along with that. And in choosing this topic, when I was teaching, I used several books. By the way, I'm heterosexual. I've been close to the LGBT community for many years. I chose Martin Dumerman, Lewis Crompton, John Boswell, Terry Castle, great authors on homosexuality in theater and the history of homosexuality. And in the four classes that I taught in 2 years, I had very, very few students who actually thought and believed that it was a choice. And I was teaching in a community that was over 50% a fundamentalist religion group. But once they got into philosophy and took their second year, it was an entirely different thing for them, and they saw that choice was not applicable. Why should one group of people be faced with that choice and not another? And because of their belief in God, they thought it would be unfair for God to put people in those positions. And I agree with that. And I stay close with the LGBT community since I moved here 3 years ago from the West. And I'm adamant from a philosophical and a naturalism point of view that there is no choice at all in homosexuality. And as for people coming out of prison and turning to be homosexuals, I think that's an absolute farce.
Well, John, thank you for the call. I appreciate the comments here, and I don't think anybody on the panel disagrees with the shred of what you said, but I know, at least I think, one of our other callers does, and that's a different John, and John in Rochester. John, go ahead.
Hey, Evan.
Hi there.
I'm not an expert on this by any means, but I did read at one time Lawrence of Arabia. He was involved with the revolt against the Ottoman Empire in the Middle East back right around World War One, I think. And he was taken captive by, he was on the side of the Arabs that were revolting, and he got taken captive. He was in disguise, undercover, I guess. Trying to permeate the Ottoman hierarchy. But in any event, he got captured by the Ottoman Turks and went to prison for a short period of time and was sexually abused and quite extensively, I guess, and supposedly became gay after that. He became a gay man after that.
And so, for you, that's evidence that Dr. Ben Carson is.
I'm telling you, it's coincidentally you're talking about this subject, but I read this a couple of years ago, when this topic came up, there is an example, Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay, is there something else that might change your mind the other way, John?
Well, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced that that makes creates facts. I think it might have been an outlying type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not. I would say it's a possibility that that type of violence or atmosphere could turn somebody, but I would say it's probably very limited. I would say if I had to throw out a figure, 1%.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, for the call and acknowledging that none of us, that's not true. Some of us at the tables are experts. I am not. And John, I appreciate your humility in that regard. But first of all, let me hit this from two different angles. Anyone want to jump in regarding Lawrence and Arabia or the points that John's making there? Does anything stand out to you? Scott?
I don't know the history well. I remember the movie. It's a great film. What I do know is that within the culture of the time in that part of the world, it was not uncommon for adult men to oftentimes have younger boys as lovers. And I'm not condoning this. This is just a historical situation that was there at the time. And some of what I've read and heard about is that that's actually what was going on, is he had a young secretary, basically, who was his lover. Now, what that means for his adult sexual orientation, I have no idea. But I have heard that. But it also was a cultural situation.
And the notion of prison turning people. My concern with this, and I want to see what the panel has to say, is when Ben Carson made those remarks, it trivialized the notion that we actually have very serious prison rape issues. And you can find, number one, a lot of literature about this. Here's a 2001 study from the Human Rights Watch charging that state authorities are responsible for widespread prisoner-on-prisoner sexual abuse, often through neglect. Elizabeth Brunig in The New Republic wrote a piece called Why Americans Don't Care About Prison Rape, and she wrote, the ubiquity of rape in prisons has led to a ubiquity of prison rape nonchalance in popular culture. People think it's funny. It promotes a rapist punishment framework, and it normalizes rape itself. It makes it very difficult for anyone to have a successful life outside of prison after the fact. That's what some of the recent literature said. Angela, what do you think?
That's so interesting that you brought up that, because I was actually recently looking at an article by Lauren Gibson and Christopher Hensley that was done in 2013, where they interviewed 142 men who had recently been incarcerated about their sexual orientation. And they actually found that there was little difference in how people identified when they went in and when they came out, even when they were victims of sexual assault. It's obvious that there is a problem with power and dominance systems within prisons, but not being expert on that, mainly being expert on LGBT issues and education and social science, I think the study is amazing and is a really good up-to-date.
John, Scott, thoughts just on prison rape? I was worried that Ben Carson's remarks were sort of equating a bunch of things and trivializing the notion that all sexual activity, even assault in prison, is just a choice of homosexuality. I've got a big problem with that, and I see you nodding there, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the quote that you just read there, I mean, I look at shows like Orange Is the New Black, and you know, they're oftentimes the rape in that show is treated as something lighthearted and, you know, just somebody getting back at somebody else instead of for the serious issue that it is. And you even have a character in there that is an employee who's, you know, perpetrating the rape and the sexual violence. So it is something that people are aware of but don't take seriously. It's sort of like, well, they deserve it.
Well, let me get back to John's point then and John's question, going all the way back to Lawrence of Arabia. I think our panel has been very open to evidence and open to what science does and does not tell us at this point. But I think Angela Clark Taylor tells us that this has been looked at in many ways, and that that we don't have to simply assume that prison rape turns someone gay.
Well, I can tell you, heterosexual high school didn't turn me straight. So, you know, I didn't go to a big gay school. So it's a little different from being incarcerated in some ways.
Oh, boy. Our panel is Scott Fearing, you just heard. He's executive director of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley. John Cullen is a coordinator for outreach for the University of Rochester's Anthony Center. He's the chair of the Pride Alliance at the University of Rochester. Angela Clark Taylor is a program manager from the University of Rochester's Susan B. Anthony Institute for Gender and Women's Studies and an instructor at the Warner School of Education. She's taught a class called LGBT Issues in Education and Human Development. I see the phone continuing to ring, and here's what we'll do here. Let me just try to grab another couple quick calls, because if I don't, every line will be jammed for the remainder of the hour. So let me grab Don in East Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your panel. I would like to relate a study that was two studies that were done in the late 1940s and the early 1950s. The first one was done by Dr. Alfred Kinsey of Indiana University, who did the hard work. He went out and interviewed people. And in his study, he found that one-third of all men in the United States had had at least one sexual experience with a member of their own sex, and that about 10% of the population he studied had were continuously having sex with members of their own sex. In the 1950s, he did a similar study of women. The numbers were slightly lower. I don't know exactly what they were. But they were slightly lower. The second study was done by a woman named Dr. Evelyn Hooker, and she discovered that in all the studies that had been done about homosexuals, she found that they were done by psychiatrists who, whose sample were people who were coming to them for psychiatric care. So she decided to do a study on members of the gay community who weren't in psychiatric care, and she found that they had just as much, they were just as sane as anyone else in the community. Dr. Carson, he must think that we choose to experience discrimination, which still in the United States can be experienced in a majority of the states. Up until 2003, he must have thought that we chose to be in prison for being gay, as many people were up until 2003. How does he think that we choose these things? He had to backtrack because most of these right-wing Republicans have to backtrack on the things that they say.
Okay, all right, let's keep Don. Thanks for the call, but let's keep it to his comments here and not overgeneralize about Republicans, Democrats, and let's keep it to Dr. Carson's comments. And to Don's point about choice, there's a local health teacher who I know, and I'm not going to mention his name because he didn't give me permission to mention a name, but I texted him this morning and I said, you have a history with your students in health where you say, you can ask me anything, middle school, early high school, literally any question about anything. And I will answer as honestly as I can. And so they do. And there are some questions that, what, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade? I mean, it's a curious time, right? And so I texted him and I said, you know, I'm just curious, has any student ever asked you about whether being gay is a choice? And how do you answer that question? He says, they ask everything, and sure, I get that question. He said, my response is generally just no, it's not a choice. And I generally follow up with just a talk about occasionally some of the difficulties someone could face, discrimination that still exists. People often don't choose to be discriminated against, and we need to consider the way we treat people. It's a nice answer. And so before I shift the conversation to agendas going forward, some events coming up, let's listen to one other comment, and that's from Dan Savage, who is, among many things, he's an author. He is probably the nation's leading sex advice columnist, and he was on CNN after Ben Carson's remarks talking about whether being gay is a choice. Let's listen to Dan Savage.
If it's something that you can choose, if you can reach into your head and flip a switch and be gay or lesbian or bisexual, then flip that switch and show us how it's done. It's not a choice. And they know it's not a choice, and that's really not the argument they're making. What religious conservatives and Republicans are saying when they say that being gay or lesbian is a choice is that that gay or lesbian, queer people shouldn't be covered by civil rights laws, we shouldn't be protected under the 14th Amendment, that the Bill of Rights doesn't apply to us, because being gay is not an immutable characteristic. It's a choice that we've made. But other things that are choices are covered by the Bill of Rights, the 14th Amendment, civil rights statutes, including faith. There are constantly people trying to ask you to choose their faith, to change your faith, to take a different faith. And religion is a covered, protected status under a settled civil rights law, and it is a choice. Marital status, military service, also protected. So if they're arguing, if religious conservatives are arguing that if something is a choice, like being gay, which they would like to argue is a choice and is not, therefore it doesn't deserve civil rights protections, then they need to be consistent and argue and advocate for stripping away civil rights protections for people of faith.
That's Dan Savage. And I tried to get my head around any comeback to that. And I read, it turned out, Dr. Ben Carson on the subject. Dr. Ben Carson saying, quote, marriage should be restricted to one man and one woman. We have something that's worked just fine for thousands of years to create a nurturing environment for raising children. This ought to be about children, and I think that's where we ought to leave it. That's why Ben Carson might tell Dan Savage, in this case, you know, he doesn't support it. Let me start with John Cullen. You heard Dan Savage's remarks. You think he's on the money there?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it might surprise Ben Carson to find out that a gay couple can also raise children. So it doesn't have to be marriage between a man and a woman to define a family unit. So
there are also some horrendous parents who are heterosexual.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's,
and there's horrendous parents of all stripes,
absolutely.
And great parents of all stripes.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic. And this is the civil rights issue. We're currently in the United States. There are only 21 states plus Washington, D.C. that offer protection against discrimination based on sexual orientation. And if we go towards gender identity, which I think you're going to talk about in a few minutes, there's only 18 states. So it boils down to a civil rights issue.
Anyone else want to jump in on the Dan Savage remarks before we shift the conversation? Angela, what do you think?
I mean, one thing I think is really interesting that I think Dan Savage kind of alludes to but doesn't come right out and say is that there's sort of an invisibility issue with a large portion of the LGBT community, which is the bisexual community, which makes up the majority of, I mean, a small majority, but the majority of the gay community. And if those people choose to be with someone of the same sex or someone of the opposite sex, they become invisible. So these ideas that people are changing who they are might just be that their identity is different and that they're bisexual, omnisexual, pansexual, or queer to begin with.
I'm going to jump in really quick, and you know I'm not good at being quick, but I will, and I'm going to give you a transition into where you want to go. So
okay.
Get ready for it. I'll throw it to you in a moment. So,
did you use the word transition as sort of a pun there?
Yeah, a little
go
bit.
Ahead.
Yeah, trying to be transparent.
Okay.
So first off, to John's point regarding the civil rights issues, yes, we've got a lot of work left to do, but ultimately, you cannot legislate behaviors between individuals, and people will still be biased, will still have misunderstandings, and that's where it comes down to work in our neighborhoods, and our families, and our schools, and people talking with each other. You can't legislate away ignorance. The second thing is we need to stop thinking of sexuality in these binaries. And I'm guilty of it because for 22 years, I've been talking about the LGBT lifestyle and focusing on talking about homosexuality and bisexuality and making these little compartments that we can put people into. What we know, and it goes all the way back to what Don was just citing with Kinsey's work, is sexuality is incredibly fluid. There's a huge bell curve on how people behave and how people have fantasies and how people identify. And what we need to do is to be open to this idea that we need to move away from binaries of heterosexual, homosexual, when it comes to our sexual orientation, just as we need to when it comes to issues of gender and being male or female, and understanding that gender is much more broadly. And take it away, Evan.
Okay, see, you packed a lot in there. Let's get a 60-second break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Allison Steinberg from the Empire State Pride Agenda. There's a lot coming up there. We're going to talk about where equality stands in 2015. After this short break and more of your phone calls, if you're waiting to jump in, we will get to you on member-supported public radio next. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I do have to tie up one loose end because I have a couple of comments. One on Twitter, with George asking, can your guest back up comments about the Boy Scouts? Was it necessary to throw them in a list with prison rapists? And on line four, this is Jeff in Livonia who takes issue with the same comment. Go ahead, Jeff. Jeff.
Hi, Evan.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think you already touched on a couple of the things that I have comments on. The first is Dr. Ben Carson and how absurd just about everything that he said was. Now, obviously, I only heard a short clip of the interview. Perhaps there was more. But, you know, this supposedly is a man of science who is blatantly ignoring science. I mean, there's absolutely no statistics. He didn't take an exit survey, you know, or anything like that. So, you know, I took great issue with that. The other thing is, you touched on it a little bit, but the reason that it was brought up was, you know, he was saying that why do we have to define or redefine marriage as a way to give everybody equal rights? Well, obviously, that's what the discussion is about nowadays. I mean, that's exactly what needs to happen. I don't see why anybody took him to task on that specific issue. I mean, that's exactly what the discussion has evolved into. Is, you know, we need to redefine it because legally, you know, that's what's needed in order to give gay couples equal rights. I wondered about that not being called into question. The other issue is something that you just mentioned, somebody brought up regarding the Boy Scouts. I happen to be a Boy Scout leader, and I took a little offense to the fact that Boy Scouts being brought up as situational to, you know, allowing adolescents to experiment with their sexuality. I don't see that at all, and I don't see that as any sort of, you know, causation.
Sure.
I'm just wondering if you can comment on that.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Scott Fearing. That was your remark earlier.
That was my remark. I own it. I'll be glad to respond. And I apologize. I probably, in the effort to try to be succinct, was bringing too many things together all at once. What I was talking about is the reality of sort of how we work as human beings and express ourselves sexually again across this continuum. And what we know is, as the caller Don pointed out with Kinsey's work, is that a majority of men, many of men oftentimes will have had some sort of same-sex experience in their lifetime. Oftentimes it happens during adolescence. Oftentimes it's in situations like Boy Scouts, and I'm one of those former Boy Scouts who had that happen in my troop. It's not that the Boy Scouts exist for that reason, but it does happen within Boy Scout troops, as it happens within sports teams and other situations as well, where you have young men together and an opportunity to oftentimes experiment and understand
sexuality.
You
didn't single out Boy Scouts for any particular reason?
No particular reason.
Okay.
Other than it was just a shortcut to be able to talk about adolescent men.
All right, so when adolescents are together, occasionally there's experimentation, whether mm-hmm. it's on a sports team, in a locker room, at a school setting, in the Boy Scouts, in a school play, whatever the case may
yep.
be. That's
it.
Okay. So let me bring in Allison Steinberg. She is the Empire State Pride Agenda's Director of Communications, and it's a busy week for them. Allison, I know you've been hearing part of the conversation. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
Sure. Thanks for having us on, Evan. Always a pleasure.
Okay, so tell us what's coming up later this week, and right here in Rochester, in fact.
Yeah, it's a big week for the Pride Agenda and for our efforts to hopefully finally pass the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act and to extend protections for transgender New Yorkers. So on Thursday, we are having a Gender Day of Action, where cities throughout New York State, including the great city of Rochester, will hold a press conference and a call to action to have our state legislature finally pass GENDA into law this session.
Again, when we talk about what GENDA is, help us understand some of the details.
Sure. GENDA will extend the existing state human rights law to include gender identity and expression as a protected class. So as of right now in New York State, which, you know, as the birthplace of the LGBT civil rights movement, we continue to fail to protect thousands of New Yorkers when it comes to very basic rights like gainful employment, renting an apartment, public, you know, attending a dinner in a restaurant or sitting in a park or using a restroom. We have, you know, the situation now where these people, not just transgender New Yorkers, but anybody who might be judged on the basis of their gender expression, could be kicked out of their home, their job, public accommodations without legal recourse.
Okay. And so, Allison, if you can hang on the line there, I know we've got some other calls to get to. Can you stay with us for a little while, Allison?
Absolutely.
Because I think some of the calls and comments can weave together with what Empire State Pride is looking at. We're going to talk about events coming up in our own community as well. But I know Joel in Churchville has some different ideas and he wanted to weigh in, and I want to take his call. Go ahead, Joel.
Hello. I'm not 100% positive who I'm talking with, other than WXXI.
Oh, you're talking to the host. Go ahead.
I am not in agreement with many of the things that are said. I believe that Dr. Carson is being maligned unfairly. I do not believe homosexuality is a genetics issue, that you're born that way. I believe that anytime someone quotes science, science is provable. If they are born that way, then it can be proven scientifically. These people can't take a room full of babies and tell us which ones are born gay. There is no gay gene. It's simply a theory that people are putting forward, and they're masking it as science.
All right, hold.
Calling anyone who doesn't agree with that theory intolerant.
No. Hold, Joe, hold on one second, and I do hope you'll stay in the line, because I think you're raising some common questions. Number one, you use the word theory. A theory is something that's much more proven. For example, evolution is a theory because we know that it is supported by evidence. We don't have really working theories that are nearly as concrete with what causes homosexuality. We've been talking about some of the scientific research, and there is some in different areas. We may find it eventually, we may not. There was a time in this world where we couldn't get around besides using wooden boats. There were lots of things that we couldn't do at the time to understand scientifically. You know, it was in 300 BC that Epicurus thought that there were little atoms, and Lucretius wrote about it in 100 BC, but that was just a guess. Turned out they were largely right. But we didn't know. We couldn't prove it at the time. So I guess let me ask you, are you open to new evidence if it comes on the scientific side?
I am absolutely always open to evidence, okay. And I believe everyone else is. I believe I'm hearing people talk about others wanting to deny rights to people, and they're talking about, they're putting words in others' mouths that aren't being said by those people. And I believe that actions do have repercussions, and to say that actions and choices are based on the way they were born is a little disingenuous, and it takes the responsibility off of the people engaging in whatever activity it may be.
Okay, and so let me also ask you this then, Joel. Let's say science proves that it is a choice, and I don't think we're going there scientifically, but let's just say that somehow we can ascertain scientifically that our sexuality...
Okay, can I stop for 1 second?
But let me ask you a question.
I believe that if science says it's a choice...
Yeah.
It doesn't need to say it's a choice. I believe it's the other side that has the burden of proof to prove it's not a choice.
Okay.
I believe human nature in general
okay.
tells people that everything is a choice unless proven otherwise.
Okay, so but that's where I was going with this. Even if science proves it's a choice, does it affect you? What does it matter to you?
It most likely will not affect me, just like people choosing to get tattoos or people choosing to pick their nose. Anytime someone does something that is seen as antisocial by some, it will affect them by that some that feels that way.
But what's antisocial about a loving relationship?
I didn't say that there was anything antisocial about.
Well, you compared it to picking your nose and getting a tattoo.
I was just saying, yeah, some people are offended by different things. Different things offend different people. Some people are offended by early marriage, 14-year-olds getting married, even though 100 years ago that was acceptable. You know, different things offend different people.
Okay.
And
I have
expressed no intolerance, but it seems like people are forcing acceptance.
Okay.
They don't just want tolerance. They want forced acceptance.
All right, so my last question to you, and we'll let the panel jump in as well if we want, but my last question to you then is, are you open to same-sex marriage? Are you okay with gay couples getting married? And would you, legally, if it were up to you, would you be okay with that?
I would be okay with it if you also explained why the other groups that are also lobbying for marriage rights would have to be denied still. I believe
such
once
as?
You open that box and say, look, we're going to let this one group that has been denied this right access, explain why the other groups need to still be denied access or else lobby on their behalf as well. It can't be just one group that's denied access without an explanation to the other groups.
Who are the other groups?
Any other banned group. 14-year-olds getting married. Pluralistic marriages. More than one person in a marriage. Why should these things continue to be banned if people are opposed to loving relationships and marriage being a choice?
All right, Angela Clark-Taylor from the University of Rochester and the Warner School wants to jump in. Go ahead, Angela.
Yeah, this is a really interesting point. This is where women's studies meets LGBT studies, in that 14-year-olds in our society have decided that they can't consent. And a healthy, equitable marriage is about two people entering it into consent, or even more people entering it into a consent from, I would say, a theoretical perspective. So as long as people can consent to that, who are we to legislate what a family is?
Okay, so I agree that we do discriminate based on age, and people think that discrimination is a good thing when it comes to marriage.
I think we discriminate based on age, for example, because as a society we make a value choice that someone who's not a fully formed adult probably ought not be driving a car until the age of 16, getting married and making those, you know, life choices.
Yeah, as long as we call it what it is.
Yeah, I think we're making a value choice.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah, anybody disagree? I think we're on 12-year-olds, 9-year-olds getting married, that's a value choice. As a society, we don't allow that. Yeah, I think there's some agreement there, Joel. So,
okay, well, very good. I'm glad you can let the other side speak.
Joel,
I appreciate your tolerance.
This is the longest call of the month, and you know what? You can call anytime, and absolutely, Joel, and I appreciate that. We took up more time than I thought there. So, Allison, let me kick it back to you, and then I want to kind of get around the table as fast as I can to hit some of the other things coming up here. And I didn't mean to monopolize the time there, but I thought that was an important conversation. So, Angela, did you want to respond to any of what Joel was saying as well there before we start to wrap the hour? I'm sorry, not Angela. My goodness. Allison Steinberg from the Empire State Pride Agenda. Angela just talked. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, no, I would only add that. You know, some of the calls that you've gotten today and certainly some of the comments that all of us that are fighting for LGBT equality here time and again really just underscore the need for our continued advocacy and education and for us to continue to lobby our lawmakers to pass more inclusive laws. Because the more that happens, then the more the next generation can grow up better educated and more inclusive.
Well, the U of R is going to be hosting LGBT Healthcare Across the Generations, a conference in April. John Cullen, what's coming up?
That's our second conference on LGBT health, which there have been multiple health disparities in the LGBT population, and the medical center has been designated a leader in LGBT healthcare equality. So we're trying to reach out and educate not only our own providers, but providers in the greater Rochester community, and that's on April 24th, and details can be found on our medical center website.
Okay, and also coming up is a conference, and Angela, what's coming up April 10th?
Yes, so yeah, April 10th, we're going to be having a conference at the University of Rochester. It's a partnership across the campus and into the community, and it's been funded by the LGBT Fund of Greater Rochester, and actually the Gay Alliance of Genesee Valley will be there, and that event is a conference called Out at Work. We're going to be looking at issues for undergraduates, graduate students, and going to the workplace.
Let me try to sneak in, against my better judgment, a couple more quick calls. People have been waiting. Gary, let's keep it moving. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Evan. First of all, in regard to Joel's comments, he said that Carson wasn't denying anybody rights, but in fact, if you deny marriage, you are denying rights. The 14-year-old marriage is a non sequitur. 14-year-olds aren't allowed to get married, whether they're a gay or straight. And to make it real quick, I think what happens is we have people that find something disagreeable or, in their words, abhorrent or offensive. And really what they're doing is whether it's transgender, gay, or lesbian, it's really a way for them to feel good or justify to themselves an attack on that person's character. And I think that's really what it boils down to. One last thing, T.E. Lawrence was known by his biographers to be a homosexual his entire life. Bye.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate that. Let me grab Paul in Rochester. 30 seconds, Paul. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I actually, in the recent past, had a great conversation with a medical professional that talked about the development of the hypothalamus and something to do with the development of the fetus during pregnancy, and that this actually changes the brain chemistry, and that this is kind of evidence that shows that it's not really a choice. It is a biological situation. So I guess I'll just leave it at that, and maybe that's a whole other debate for another day.
No, Paul, thanks for the call. And if you missed it earlier this hour, we were citing research in various forms. And I think my summation would be various forms of research has found genetic differences between gay and straight people. It hasn't found a cause of homosexuality, but it does demonstrate that genetically, Scott Fearing and I are not exactly perfectly the same, and he just chooses one thing and I just choose another, that there may be differences genetically. We don't know if it's the cause, but we know there are genetic differences. Fair to say?
Fair to say.
Okay. So last question for Allison Steinberg from the Empire State Pride Agenda. If people want to follow the progress of what's going on with Genda, et cetera, how do they do that, Allison?
Yeah, absolutely. We encourage people to come out on Thursday at 3 p.m. to the press conference, which will take place at City Hall, 30 Church Street. We also encourage people every day to follow us on our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, prideagenda.org, and we will all come together as a community and get this bill passed.
It was a packed hour, Allison. Thank you for jumping in with us and updating us, and we will talk to you again soon on this program. Thanks again.
That's great. Thanks for having us.
Allison Steinberg, the Empire State Pride Agenda's Director of Communications. Scott from the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley, always good to talk to you, Scott.
It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for being here. John Cullen from the University of Rochester, the chair of the Pride Alliance there. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Evan.
Cheers. Thanks for being here. And Alan Gillette Clark-Taylor, the program manager from the University of Rochester Susan B. Anthony Institute for Gender and Women's Studies. Thanks again to you.
Thank you.
Short break and a very fresh hour next hour right here on Member-Supported Public Radio.